You're listening to HIV News and Views, a podcast series from thebody.com. For a transcript of this podcast and for more interviews and first-person stories, visit us on the web.
Hi there, this is Bonnie Goldman, editorial director of thebody.com. Welcome. Today we're going to take a look at body shape changes, an issue that remains an ongoing problem for many people living with HIV. These changes are sometimes known as lipodystrophy, lipoatrophy, fat wasting, or fat accumulation, but whatever they are known as, they all involve the same thing, an unusual amount of fat loss or fat gain in specific parts of the body. Some people with HIV have watched their face, legs, arms, or buttocks transform by fat wasting. Others have seen the growth of fat deposits on their backs or necks. Men and women alike have even watched their breasts swell due to this problem. These physical changes are relatively well known and described, although there are no treatments yet. But there's another side to body shape changes that receives much less attention, the emotional side. That's what we're going to talk about today, the impact that body shape changes have on everyday lives of people living with HIV. I have with me today Nelson Virgil, a longtime AIDS activist and 26-year survivor of HIV. He runs a popular HIV/AIDS email mailing list and is a frequent speaker at workshops across the country. He has been witness to the emotions tied to these often disfiguring body shape changes, and he's watched the desperation escalate as the years pass without any solution. Last year, Nelson created an anonymous internet survey that asked people with HIV to detail the impact of body shape changes on their quality of life and self-esteem. The survey results were presented at a major medical conference in London last fall. I am pleased to have Nelson here today to discuss his survey and the rather troubling results. Welcome, Nelson.
Hi, buddy. Thanks for having me again.
Today, I thought it would be a great chance to talk with you about a poster that you had presented at an international conference in London, I believe.
Yes, in London, the Adverse Events and Lipodystrophy in HIV conference this past November.
You're an activist. Is it usual for an activist to present a poster at a medical conference?
Yeah, social-related posters, but very few of us know that we can do that. So my background is chemical engineering, and I have an MBA, so I have no real medical background. But really, I wanted to present a survey, because it's never done before, on what people are going through out there with body changes in HIV. Believe it or not, we've had some studies, small ones, where this question was asked, how do you feel? Is this depressing you? It showed that people were experiencing stress, anxiety, low self-esteem, etc. But I wanted to go deeper into the question. So I had a 22-question survey that was posted online, and the body actually helped me out a lot to get the word out. And luckily, I had 1,100 people answer the survey in a matter of 6 months. The poster was presented to show the results of that survey.
Did you do this survey to meet an unaddressed need?
Yes. My feeling as an activist is that we're moving away from lipodystrophy research. Reimbursement of different options that are out there for lipoatrophy, facial wasting, or hump removal, or liposuction. We're getting a lot of trouble getting these options reimbursed by Medicare, Medicaid, insurance companies, patient assistance programs. So I wanted to let researchers know that this problem is not gone. We have a lot of patients suffering from this problem, and they're not getting reimbursement and coverage of the therapies.
It's not only a reimbursement issue, but isn't it a hugely emotional issue?
It's extremely emotional. I've been positive for 25 years, and nobody wants to look sick. Nobody. Even if we are not feeling very well, you hate when you go to work and people say, well, you don't look very good. I don't want to hear that. Or what happened to you? You look tired. Are you losing weight? Everybody wants to look healthy. So, yes, a hugely emotional issue.
Don't you think it's more than looking sick?
Looking older than you are, looking that you're not attractive anymore, looking that you're afraid to go out to show your face. You're afraid to go back to work if you're on disability. You're afraid to be found out that you're positive if you're in a closet about it. There are many, many issues. People that work in the entertainment field or hotel management, or when you're dealing with public, I mean, the most surprising thing in this survey is that of the 1,100 people that answered, 25% of them had thought about suicide in the past. And for me, that was shocking. The survey showed that 90% of people have anxiety and depression related to body changes, but I did not know that 25% had thoughts of suicide because of this. That was extremely shocking for me.
That is very shocking. Don't you think part of that pain is due to the lack of acknowledgement by your own doctor and by the people around you that about what you're going through, in terms of if you're losing fat in your face or your legs look weird? The doctor just says, okay, well, just take your pills.
They don't really say that because doctors know better, but they say, look how well you're doing. Your CD4s are up. You're undetectable. You're alive now. I have to say, many doctors are really trying hard to educate themselves on lipoatrophy and lipodystrophy options. They really are. To be honest with you, I don't think we're doing enough to educate doctors about patient assistance programs, about where to send patients when they bring up the issue of facial wasting or belly or the hump or parotid gland enlargement on the side of your face. It's not like they really don't want to help. A lot of doctors are not educated because there haven't been any real good efforts to train them beyond what we know about tenofovir not causing lipoatrophy as much as D4T or ACT. Doctors do not know about what options are out there and who is paying for them. So that's my goal, not only as a survey, but also through my website called facialwasting.org. I have a whole list of doctors that are doing different things. And I know the body has done a great job of having a lipoatrophy research center. You probably are the only ones that have that on the internet. And yet we have to do a lot more work on showing resources to people. How do you apply to a patient assistance program to get some help in your payments? What are the options out there? Doctors already know, and I think it is time to set up lectures, seminars, to educate doctors so that when the patient says, look at my face, look at my belly, look at my veiny legs, look at my butt, I can't sit for more than 10 minutes without hurting, what can I do? The doctor can say, look at this table of options, call these people, or I'm going to send you somewhere for a referral. That's what I want to do. Yes.
A lot of people think that this is an old issue. For people, if they were diagnosed in the last couple of years, they're not going to have this experience, and so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
It's almost like we're dying dinosaurs, you know? That's an excellent point. If you're recently infected or in the past 4 years, and you started medications, in the past three, you're probably going to have less of a problem because doctors are not prescribing the main culprits of facial lipoatrophy and body lipoatrophy, which are CERET or ACT. And Crixivan caused some problems with insulin resistance and belly fat. So yes, your chances are going to be lower. But I'm still hearing from people that are just new and recently diagnosed, taking a Atripla, for instance, which is a combination of three drugs, or taking very, what we call lipid-friendly or combinations, that are experiencing changes to their body. A study done by the ACTG actually showed that 11% of people taking tenofovir, 3TC, and Sustiva experienced lipoatrophy. That's 11% of people that had never been exposed to ACT or D4T. So there is a minority of patients that may have lipoatrophy, even though they have never been exposed to the main culprits of this problem.
Isn't it true that we still really don't understand how or why body shape changes are happening?
Not yet. We don't have all the answers. We don't even have what we call a case definition, meaning researchers and clinicians have not agreed on how we're going to define this syndrome. And actually, it is not really a syndrome. It's a combination of syndromes. And that's what makes it even more difficult to classify for insurance companies and Medicare. Okay, what is this? What is this diagnosis? It really is. The survey included mostly patients that are over 40 years old. They have been positive for over 15 years. Mostly white. Unfortunately, I didn't have as many Latinos like me or black people or American Indians or Asians. I'm mostly male in my survey, unfortunately. I don't know why. Maybe more males were exposed to the drugs before, or maybe more males accessing the internet. Remember, this survey was only available on the internet, so it was skewed that way. And they have been positive for around 15 to 20 years. I would say 20, 30% were having positive for over 20 years. Which makes me feel a little good because I usually feel lonely being a long-term survivor, but out of 1,100 people, 275 were like me. A lot of men and women were exposed to D4T, for instance, CERET. 84% of them were exposed to this drug. So, of course, many of them are having lipoatrophy and facial wasting and all that. 80% of them were exposed to ACT. 51% had taken Crixivan, which is another drug that has been implicated to some of these problems. My survey is a little bit biased when it comes to presenting a set of sample of patients that have been long-term survivors exposed to a lot of these old drugs. They're having more problems with body composition and body changes. Will this happen to the newer people that are taking Atripla? I don't think it will be as big of a problem. We do have to still research what's happening to those 11% that I mentioned before. But at the same time, there's thousands of us out of 1.2 million people in the United States that are HIV positive. Around 450,000 are taking medications. Out of those, maybe half, probably more, have been exposed to HIV medications for over 10 years. So there's around 250,000 of us that may have some body changes in this country. Yes, we are the older generation. Yes, we need help. I hear clinicians say, our research is more focusing now on insulin resistance and metabolic syndrome. I keep reminding them we need to deal with fat accumulation. Nobody has a real good answer about why our bellies increase. Even in the new studies with Atripla, we see fat increase in the visceral area, in the organ area. Belly fat accumulation is still happening. What we're not seeing as much is lipoatrophy, which is fat loss under the skin. We're not seeing as much of that. But yes, we're seeing fat accumulation. And we're seeing muscle loss, too, that is not being researched.
So, Nelson, your survey attempted to describe the problem in great detail.
Yes. What are people suffering off? What are the needs out there? It is a biased sample because we did not include that many people that were infected under 5 years ago. So I'm going to tell you something else. I asked the question, what kind of body changes are you experiencing or have you experienced? 63% of them said belly fat gain. 79% almost said facial wasting. 71% butt wasting, baby legs and arms, 68%, increased breast size, which some women and men can have increase in their breast tissue, 22%. So as you can tell, most of them have had some changes, and they're pretty severe. Have you experienced depression or anxiety due to the body changes? 88% said yes, 88%. This is not vanity. People still get over it. We're older. We're not going to look ever as good as we used to. And this is bullshit. I tell people that, you know, when you look 20 years older than you are, when you look like you are going to die, you're sick, when in fact you have 300, 400 T cells, you worry. Of course you do. It's probably the most important question. I was asking people, what has changed in your life because of this? The number one, 74%, said decreased sexual activity. And the number two is stop socializing and going out to meet people. So people are feeling so self-conscious. They're not going out to meet other people. And obviously they're not having as much sex because they're afraid to be rejected or they are being rejected for their looks. Stop dating, 51%. Worry too much about what people think, find out if I'm positive, 60%. 57% said they stopped looking themselves in the mirror. They probably just comb their hairs in the morning. When we were young, you remember how many times we used to look ourselves in the mirror.
So a lot of self-esteem issues.
Yes. Most change their clothing style, wearing more baggy clothing to hide bellies. 30% said they have depleted their money in search of a solution. Then I asked them, what have you done to try to reverse your body changes? Obviously, the two top things people say is that I'm exercising more, 73%, and I'm watching what I eat. 74%. Fortunately and unfortunately, we have a very few studies, tiny studies on exercise that have shown some benefits in body changes. We have seen decreases in visceral fat, increases in muscle mass. Actually, I really think exercise therapy should be a therapy in HIV and should be reimbursed as such. That's one of my activist goals. Unfortunately, we only have a tiny 22 studies, very tiny cohorts, that show there may be some influence in what we're eating, but not really. We're not seeing that dramatic of a difference in decreasing carbohydrates. Actually, there's not a single well-done study that shows whether or not if we decrease our carbohydrate intake, for instance, we have any improvements in visceral fat. Nobody has done that study, and it makes sense to do it. What else? Got my face injected with a filler or a cosmetic product, 41%. Which is probably what most people are trying to reach because there are some options like Sculptra and Radius in the United States that have patient assistance programs. 45% took supplements, even though we have no data whatsoever on supplements. testosterone, 47%, though it could be many reasons. Maybe people had low sex drive, but testosterone has been shown to decrease waist size in one study with SATG, 1 inch of decrease in on the waist size, but it was mostly fat under the skin, not visceral fat, that went down. Some, you know, people using growth hormone, anabolic steroids, very few people got liposuction, but implants, that's a hot subject. People are getting their buttocks fixed, but very few people can afford that because it's a lot of money, and you have to go to Mexico or Canada or, you know, other countries, and it's only for the few that have over $6,000 to spend. Some people are using padded underwear, which is a really cool option. It only costs $25.
People keep on thinking it's cosmetic, it's superficial, it's narcissistic. It's really not. People just want to look normal, and they want to feel comfortable.
I've gotten some work done down there, too. I usually try something before I talk about it, but I may not be as poor as most people are out there, unfortunately. More than 60% of us are on Medicare or Medicaid. But it is painful. A lot of people, when I give lectures, they ask me, what kind of chairs do you have? I'm hoping you have some padded chairs, because it really is painful. I think whoever comes up with an option for buttock wasting don't want to make a lot of money in this country. Why? Because it is related to functional capacity and pain. Anything related to pain can usually get better reimbursement from every insurance company. It is, may be perceived as cosmetic, and yet it is a pain-related issue. Something else I wanted to bring up is an option for belly fat, for lipohypertrophy. This company in Canada, CERT, is doing research on a growth hormone precursor that has shown some good results, 13% loss in 26 weeks. I don't think it's great, but I think it's okay. And it's a product that you inject under the skin in your belly, a lot like growth hormone used to. But the good thing about the drug is that it does not cause, supposedly, side effects like increased blood sugar, body aches, and carpal tunnel syndrome, like growth hormone used to. It may, and I think it probably will, get approved in the United States within a year. I think we're going to see a lot more awareness on lipohypertrophy if Serono lectures and markets this to doctors. My concern is that it will probably be perceived as a cosmetic thing, again, by Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance companies, and it may not get paid for. It's daily injections, it probably will be very expensive. So the same struggle we're having right now, trying to get insurance companies to pay for facial lipoatrophy options like Sculptra or Radius, or even silicone microdroplets. By the way, you can find more information on my website, facialwasting.org. I would say the rejection rate for reimbursement is probably 90%. Only HMOs like Kaiser and sometimes even the VA system, the Veterans Administration, have it in their formulary. So we're seeing some progress, but not big enough. I'm trying to get experts, third-party payers, activists, people from the FDA, people from different companies to sit down in a roundtable to come up with a plan on how we can change policy to include HIV-related body changes as a clinical condition that requires reimbursement. Some doctors from Brazil presented a poster in the Lipodystrophy Conference, where they show that the government has implemented this program for lipodystrophy, not only for facial wasting, but for the belly liposuction, where the government pays for those options. Canada has some help to the Netherlands, many countries in Europe. So we're lagging behind them. It's been 11 years since lipodystrophy was first mentioned. It is time to do something about it.
Talking to the point of who's going to pay for these treatments, 62% of people in your survey had to pay for it themselves. What was encouraging was 18% had insurance to pay for this.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's actually not as discouraging. 18% of people found insurance companies to pay for whatever they used. But 62% had to pay for it out of their own pocket. And to get your face fixed, if you have moderate to severe wasting, facial wasting, costs around $7,000 to $8,000 easily. We're talking about Sculptra or Radius.
Isn't there a patient assistance program?
There's a patient assistance program. If you make under $40,000 a year, you can have full coverage of the Sculptra. But you still have to pay for doctor's fees to inject it in your face. So most doctors are charging around $350 to $400 a session. And most people require at least 4 to 7 sessions because it is not a permanent product. It's a product that builds up slowly in your face, and then some people need touch-ups a year later. For radio, there is a patient assistance program. They have a discount for people that make under $40,000. Very few people know about Radius. Radius is another product that has shown very good results. It probably lasts a little longer than Sculptra, and you need also at least 4 sessions for that. So there are 2 products in the United States approved, Sculptra and Radius. Both have patient assistance programs, and you can find that more online. Sculptra.com has a list of doctors in every zip code that have been trained, and Radius does too. There's another option called silicone micro droplets. It is permanent. It takes also around 4 sessions, but it's not paid because it's not approved. It's used off-label.
You've described the problem, and you showed that most people are paying for it by themselves. Most people are very concerned about this issue, and the survey was presented at an international conference. What's the next step?
I think we need to do a few things. We need to increase awareness that this problem hasn't gone away. We need to, as I said, set up brainstorming or roundtable discussion, including the main players, that not only the patient community, activist community, but also doctors, researchers that have worked in lipodystrophy before, people from Medicare, Medicaid, people from third-party payment companies, and put together some kind of plan. Okay, do we need more data? What are the CPT codes that actually get reimbursement? There's some out there, but they're not well defined. How can we convince insurance companies that this is not only a cosmetic issue, this is a clinical issue that impacts quality of life and depression, anxiety, and even suicidal thoughts, and even adherence? There are some studies that show that adherence tends to drop when people are very afraid of their medications and the body changes. I foresee this booklet that we all put together with recommendations and then go into policy change. I would love to see a bill passed by Congress with breast cancer. They have to do this too, and they passed the bill. I want to see a HIV lipodystrophy reimbursement bill in 2 years, no longer than that. Takes a lot of work. Hopefully we have a better administration too. So that's what I want to see. But we have to start with some kind of document.
A lot of people listening to this have been in desperation, and now that they're hearing this, I imagine they're feeling very hopeful. Is there anything that people listening to this can do to help you?
They need to email me, and my email is NelsonVirgil, NelsonVirgil, at anything, at yahoo.com, gmail.com, AOL.com. That's very easy to remember. Say, Nelson, I'm very frustrated. I want to help. I have to tell you, Bonnie, and so this is the most disturbing thing that I've learned. There's an 80-20 rule in everything in life. 100% of us may have a problem, okay? 80% of people watch 20% doing the work. And 80% of people complain and bitch and moan and are depressed, and yet they don't think they have the power to make a change. They think they're too small to make a change. They think their voice doesn't count. But you know what? Writing a letter to Congress or to your representative or senator and pick on the phone, if that's all you did a great thing. We need to empower people to know that there's something I can do. I read this book, The Tipping Point. We need to get to a tipping point in this problem in which there's so many people complaining to their Congress people that a bill is passed. I really think that we need a bill, and I think we can do it.
So it sounds like you're energized and you just need people to help you.
Yes, I need people to know that they are not little, they are not small, that you are powerful. Know that without leaving your house, you can do a lot. You can write letters, you can call. You don't have to leave your house.
I think people want concrete things that they can do because they don't necessarily know what to do.
Yeah, you can either write your case, or you can write a friend's case. Anybody that can vote for a seat in Congress can complain about something, even if you're not directly suffering from it. You don't have to have lipodystrophy, by the way, to help us either. So you don't have to even be HIV positive. So email me. I'm trying to come up with that formatted letter.
This has been really interesting, Nelson. I think this is the beginning of getting this covered by insurances and getting some attention paid to this issue.
Yes, because we only get what we deserve. If we're not doing enough to change something, we don't deserve the change. So I tell people, if you think you really deserve somebody to take care of this for you, you need to get involved, because otherwise you don't deserve the change. Unfortunately, there are a lot of us that may be tired or depressed. When you're depressed or have anxiety, like in this case a lot of people do, you don't feel like picking up the phone. You don't feel like writing a letter. So I understand that too. It's very hard to be empowered when you're depressed.
particularly when you have a stigmatized disease, it's layers of issues that are difficult to deal with.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the other problems related to metabolic disorders, like bone density loss. Some of us are losing bone density. Some of us, you know, are having diabetes and insulin resistance. Lipodystrophy is not only the body issues that we see, it's also there are lots of issues internally that are happening, fatty liver and stuff like that. That's all part of this syndrome, so that also should be discussed. I would suggest that you, if you haven't visited the Lipoatrophy Resource Center of the body, read the information there. There are videos there. Patient testimonials, there are resources. Facialwasting.org is one of my websites, too. You can always email me. You can always ask me questions in my nutrition and exercise section of the expert forum. And also, I have a group, FOSS Health, it's called Yahoo Groups, that has 3,000 members that discuss these things, too. The body also has a chat section. So you are not alone. I tell people, you are not alone. If you're home worrying about this, you're not alone. There's maybe 250 of us, 1,000 of us out there that are feeling just like you. And connect with those people, network with those people, because you are not little, you're powerful. Even if you have depression, even if you are afraid of disclosing, you still are powerful. So we need to get this done.
Thank you, Nelson.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebody.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us. Thank you for listening to HIV News and Views. For more podcasts, be sure to visit us online at www.thebody.com.